All right, the next matter is David W. Willis against Lori C. Willis. Mr. Willis is pro se. Are you here?
Yes, sir.
All right, you may come up to council table and Ms. Riley for the appellee.
Right.
All right. Mr. Willis, you're pro se. There should be a sheet with your name on it up here. You will need to sign that sheet before you leave today.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. All right, then, Mr. Willis, you're the appellant. You have 15 minutes. You can reserve part of that time for rebuttal if you wish.
All right.
You'll need to let me know if you do wish to do that and how much time you want to reserve, and my clerks will keep track of that.
Yeah, I'll reserve 5 minutes.
All right. You may step up to the podium there and proceed when you're ready.
All right, I appreciate the opportunity to come before this council here and offer up the appeal to the final divorce ruling. I pray tell you've had opportunity to
We've read your briefs and we're familiar with the case.
Assignment of error. So I'll dive right into the numerous Virginia codes that spell out and stipulated in the write-up here of the Commonwealth's desire for both parents to be a vital part of the children's life. So it is with strong disagreement that I feel that this final ruling allows for their father of two minor children, to be involved in their lives. Again, the no contact order, the complete removal of all custodial rights with my children, who I now haven't seen since January 1st, 2017, just does not strike the right balance of the code as I read it, as I believe is the spirit of it, in that both parents should be involved in their lives. This ruling stemmed from a visit that I made with the children during the Christmas break prior to that to see their terminally ill grandmother. Again, in testimony, that visit was, although a tough time with the family, it was certainly an opportunity for them to see their grandmother one last time. She passed less than 2 weeks later. The ruling days after that return trip that struck my rights and to this day still hasn't provided any means of reconciliation with them does seem harsh, does seem completely out of balance with, again, the code that I've mentioned here on multiple steps here. The children are in counseling. I am seeing a counselor. There's certainly still hope that we can find some ability to reconcile and heal in our relationship. But again, this ruling wasn't based on any type of physical abuse, wasn't based on any type of warrants or other findings other than the testimony of the minor children that they didn't want to spend time with me. This is from the judge. And the children's subjective counselor, who felt it in the best interest of the children not to spend time with them. So I find multiple assignments of error with that ruling. The divorce was granted on the grounds of adultery. Again, while an emotional affair was presented and confirmed, any evidence of a physical relationship of any kind simply was not presented. There is nothing that was discussed during this multi-day trial that brought any type of evidence stating that this was grounds for adultery. Assignment error number 7, there's no allowance made for, as I continue to pay off the equity in the house, the mortgage in the house, there's no it continues to be a split equity until the sale of the house beyond the end of the separation date, which was back July 21st, 2015. So again, as I am incurring all the costs for the for the home, mortgage, insurance, all that, she is still, under this current ruling, entitled to a half of the equity up until the sale, however long that may take. Item number eight, the blue value book of the car was presented as testimony. The $2,000 assessment was presented into evidence as an exhibit. Opposing counsel provided a different figure, and that was not based on any type of blue book value. I'm not sure where that came from. The judge, in his final ruling, agreed with opposing counsel's value and never mentioned the exhibit that I had presented. So it just didn't seem to be full vetting of both exhibits presented. Item nine, my wife worked for 10 years, eight of which were during our marriage. She incurred a substantial 401k and retirement account. Despite repeated requests during discovery for that information to be provided, it wasn't. In the final ruling, none of her 401k assets or retirement accounts were presented as being split. And so I think it only fair to, as I split my assets incurred during the marriage, that she would also be obligated to do the same thing. And then item 10, again, the judge waffled on his initial proclamation that the tools that I had, which she had taken after the separation, she'd come into the house and taken a whole bunch of stuff, that those be returned to me. Later, he recanted that and said, well, what she's got, she can keep. You keep what you got. So there's just a inconsistency there with the way that was handed down. So again, these are the assignments of error that I've touched on. I don't think there's any real compelling evidence that would allow for any of these, based on the testimony provided, the information included, and certainly I would hope that this court would be able to broker a fair, equitable custodial agreement that can somehow see me reconciled with my children again.
All right, thank you, Mr. Willis. You actually have about 7.5 minutes then you can use in rebuttal, so okay. You only asked for five.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Riley?
Good morning, Your Honors. I apologize.
It's all right.
I'm nearsighted, so I will be.
That's right. You can see I'm half blind, too, so.
Your Honor, I'm not going to relitigate the case. You've read the briefs. You've read the transcripts. We are here because the appellant filed for a petition for appeal. And it shouldn't be granted for several reasons. Procedurally, the petition should be
dismissed. The appeal's been granted. The appeal's before us. So we're going to resolve the appeal one way or the other.
The petition should be dismissed for procedurally. His assignments are of error. According to Rule 517, they should be clear and concise without extraneous argument. Specific errors in the ruling below upon which the party intends to rely, the specific case law to be overturned, extended, or modified, or an exact reference to the pages of the transcript where the alleged error has been preserved in the trial. He has none of that. He's done none of that. C1, little colon, little small eyes, of the same rule, insufficient assignment of error. An assignment of error that does not address the findings or rulings of the trial court, or which merely states that the judgment is contrary to law and the evidence is not sufficient. If the assignment of error are insufficient, the petition for appeal should be dismissed. Rule 5A, 20C, tells you what the brief of appellant should contain. The assignment of error is with a clear and exact reference where each assignment of error was preserved in the trial court. He did none of that. The transcripts show that he did none of that. Rule 5A, 20E, Your Honor, the standard of review in the argument. The appellant has the wrong standard of review. His brief states that the standard of review is de novo. It's not de novo, Your Honor. This court has ruled on multiple occasions in multiple cases, including, and I'll get to this one later, Your Honor, that the trial court, the reviewing court, reviews evidence in light most favorable to the prevailing party below, granting all reasonable inferences fairly deducible from the evidence. In D'Ambrosio versus D'Ambrosio in 2005, which was a divorce appeal before this court, you noted Ferguson versus Grubb, which particularly stated that the trial court is entitled to respect for it saw the parties, heard the witness testify, and was in closer touch with the situation than the appellate court, which is limited to review of the written record. Also, there is a presumption on appeal that the trial court thoroughly weighed all the evidence, considered the statutory requirements, and made its determination. Your Honor, I could go through a litany of cases that this court has heard and affirmed the trial court, basically saying that the trial court got it right unless clearly proven in error. Mr. Willis has not pointed any error, and he did not preserve any error. And there's the transcripts, the partial transcripts, which he submitted, also clearly shows that the judge weighed all the evidence, and there was no error or no objection. And he's referring to exhibits that never existed, Your Honor, which is confusing into itself. His own case that he cites isn't even applicable except for the fact that it states that the trial court is a fact finder. I think he cited, I apologize, and I may butcher the name, Vasivakidis versus Durr. And in that, this court says, we do not decide whether custody should have been changed as a question of fact, but only if there was credible evidence to support the factual finding. And it's inapplicable because it was a case involving a motion to amend. This was an initial ruling on custody, Your Honor, that he's trying to overturn and have this court remand and review. Also, Your Honor, his custody appeal, or his portion of his appeal this time, and the first five assignments of error and the first five parts of his brief have to do with the custody. That was already heard by this court on appeal and was summarily dismissed. The trial court was quote-unquote therefore we summarily affirm the judgment of the trial court. And that was in October 2017, Your Honor. That brief that he filed this time is verbatim from 1 to 5 of the brief that he filed that you dismissed on the appeal before.
We affirmed.
You affirmed. I apologize, Your Honor. And res judicata should be applied to that, Your Honor. He makes reference to Virginia Code sections about custody and visitation and what the courts should look at. But in Joins v. Payne, it is clear this court states that although the trial court must examine all factors set out in 20-124.3, it is not required to quantify or elaborate exactly what weight or consideration is given to each statutory factor. As long as evidence in the record supports the trial court's ruling and the trial court has not abused its discretion, its ruling must be affirmed on appeal. In Kane versus Smizak, and I think I pronounced that right, in 2003, this court referenced Mulberry versus Commonwealth and the Black's Law Dictionary about what it means to do. I'm sorry, Your Honor, let me get to that section. I have the case. I get tired of writing. Give me one moment, Your Honor. In D'Ambrosio, Your Honor, this court stated that when a trial court hears evidence at an oral sentence hearing, its factual findings are entitled to great weight and will not be disturbed on appeal unless plainly wrong or without evidence to support it. noting that an appeal, the trial court's ruling is peculiarly entitled to respect, for it saw the parties, heard the testimony and the witnesses, and in closer touch with the situation than the appellate court, which is limited to review of the written record. Also, there is a presumption on appeal that the trial court thoroughly weighed all the evidence, considered statutory requirements, and made its determination based on the child's best interest. Your Honor, with that, the standard of review is there's a presumption that the trial court got it right. And with that, I respectfully request that you find that the trial court got it right.
Thank
Ms.
you,
Riley. I want to, first of all, thank you for outlining the standard of review that applies in this court, because it is probably the most critical element of our responsibilities here. So I thank you for doing that, just to be clear that we all know on what page we have to operate. The standard of review is one that focuses, that accepts the findings of fact of the lower court, and then just looks at whether the evidence has been properly utilized in reaching a conclusion, which is what you stated. I don't want to restate the law. I just want to thank you for doing that, because it's set out in your brief, but it's always important from my perspective, as many times as we hear it, to hear it again. I also want you to clarify one of the factual issues in the case. It has to do with the custody determination, because I'm not sure it was clearly stated by Mr. I may not have understood it. I'm not sure if I understood what he said. So were the custody rights, the parental rights of Mr. Willis abrogated? Do I understand correctly that it's a visitation issue that has been conditioned on the recommendations for further contact by the children's therapist?
If you read
underlying
the
ruling,
the underlying ruling was that there was a recommendation that from the therapist that Mr. Willis seek independent counsel. So that the therapist can talk in rebuilding the relationship that was, in essence, destroyed at that time. The judge, if you read the transcript, the partial transcript that was submitted, the judge made it clear that he wasn't going to force Mr. Willis to do that.
Mr. Willis
had to make his own determination of whether he wanted a relationship with his children, and he was to incumbent upon himself to make sure that he put himself into a situation which would allow him to resume visitation with his children and wanting the children and having the children resume visitation with him. If you read the transcripts, it's very clear that Judge Farmer said very clearly, I don't think you want that, and I don't think the children want to never see you again, even though they've said it.
So he's not, Mr. Willis is not under court order to work with the therapist. He is to make that choice.
He is to make that choice.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to be clear. I understood that was what was ordered.
And the children's, if you read the transcript,
thank you for clarifying.
It is somewhat confusing.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Riley. I gather you're the guardian ad litem, Mr. Taylor?
Yes.
Do you have anything you want to add?
Your Honor, I appreciate the opportunity to be here, Your Honors, and I don't want to further belabor your time, I believe, Ms. Riley.
I know you've taken a position on brief. I just didn't know if you wanted to add anything. You have a few minutes.
I don't have anything further. I do join with the appellee in regard to their position and statements that Ms. Riley has made this morning.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, in that case, Mr. Willis, the floor is yours. We have about 7.5 minutes in rebuttal.
All right, I wanted to follow up on a couple of things. The case law, again, I say two instances where, again, Crute versus Crute, the trial court refused to place great weight on the identity of the child's primary caregiver. And again, in Vasikis versus Dare, the trial court that favors the mother during the tender years of the children. Again, I think it's clear from the way this has been ruled that incredible favoritism has been shown to the mother, and it simply doesn't match up with the complete removal of the custody rights. Let me read the revised to maybe help answer your question about the decreed custodial and visitation rights. It says that it is a judge ordered and decreed, and sole legal and physical custody shall be granted to mother, and that there shall be no contact between the above the referenced children and me.
Until you work with the children's therapist, if you choose.
It says,
and she has determined that a recommendation for further contact can be made. Isn't that the full holding of the court, Mr.
Until
Willis?
Until it is recommended by the
children's therapist.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's more than that. Because I think it's important to recognize what's at issue for the trial court's ruling. Until you choose, not the court chooses, you choose to work with the children's therapist, and on that, and in that relationship, therapist, father, children, the children's therapist can make a honest recommendation that contact be resumed. That's what the court ordered. So it's up to you, I think, is the way it's put. I think it's important to know what the ruling is.
Yes.
And by the way, let me just raise one other issue. You heard Ms. Riley's argument was on the failure to meet the requirements for appeal to this court by your appeal. Did you hear that?
I believe she was talking about an earlier appeal.
No, this one. She and her.
Oh, okay.
You read her brief. I didn't ask her about that part of her argument, but she's arguing you did not meet our court's requirements for us to look at this case. Did you hear that?
I did. Yes.
Do you want to make any comment about that?
Well, I disagree with that. I think I did bring reference to. In the five appendices that I provided, the three variations of the custody visitation rulings that were made, and I think again that hangs out of balance with the Virginia case law, both in the ruling that was made. And the inconsistency that was presented in the transcript. Touching on the visitation order, it does say, until the children's therapist recommends otherwise. My argument is, who is she to make such an objective ruling when she is the children's therapist exclusively? I've been meeting with the therapist for over a year. And while I do hope to find a third-party neutral legal, is try to broker a deal where we can find a third family counselor to drive us towards reconciliation, this ruling is biased in giving the children's counselor sole direction in whether we come to any type of meeting or reconciliation. Again, Your Honor, it's been over a year and a half. No contact, no meeting.
This is an issue that is properly something that a trial judge has to address and did address. We are here to look at errors of law and failures, if any, as argued, to meet the rules, the procedural rules. That's what we have to look at.
Okay.
I hear what you're arguing, but there are other issues that are properly matters that we look at. And whether there was bias, whether the facts were properly decided, that was for the trial court. We decide issues of law and issues of procedural propriety, all the rules that Ms. Riley talked about. That's what we can look at here. But anyway, I thank you for, again, addressing what your concerns are, and I understand them. But I just want to make sure, and we're going to be looking at all of it from the point of view of law, and procedural requirements as has been put before us.
Right. Okay. Again, I'm sorry if I haven't, you know, more
clues. No apologies are necessary, Mr. Willis. Yeah. Thank you so much and wish you well.
Do I have any time left?
Or? You do. You have about a minute and a half.
Okay. Just wanted to touch on the previous appeal that was reviewed. Again, this case, the divorce decree was separated into a May ruling, partial ruling, and then an August final ruling. So while there was some relation between the custodial appeal that I filed, it was different because the final ruling had not been set in place until August. So that is why I brought that up. That is why I addressed that. And that's how I believe it stands in contrast to the earlier appeal that I submitted, I guess, last September.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Before we come down to Greek Council, let me just see where we stand with the docket. I gather Mr. Weisbrot is not here yet. Do we have counsel in the matter?